Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. It is good to be back and slightly different programme this week. No Jack Bennion, but I think we've replaced him with someone slightly better. Just my opinion. Probably loads more. Welcome to Absolute Rally, not for the first time, Chris. Chris Meek. Hello, Chris.
Hey, how you doing? I don't want you criticising Jack. He can probably write better than me, but in any case.
He can write faster. That's the only thing he can do faster.
We'll give him that. He can write fast.
Yeah, absolutely. Ryan's Champion is, of course, with me. Ryan is brooding a bit like my four-day-year-old because you're at Rally Legends this weekend and he's not. So we'll talk about Rally Legends shortly. It's the first chance we've had to congratulate you on Spain. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. It was a sweet one after a difficult period through the middle of the season. So yeah, it was nice to put a mark back on the board for sure.
Can I ask you, the stage end quote that you gave was one of those ones where you go, yes, you know, it's one of those high five moments. It reminded me of the Rocky Balboa one. You know, it's not about how hard you can hit, it's about how many times you can keep getting up when you've been hit. It's one of those moments. And you kind of had that in the back of your mind where you think, I'm going to say that, I've got something I want to say and I want to make a point when this happens.
I don't know. Yeah, like throughout the middle part of the season, for sure, we're in for a hell of a lot of criticism from all angles. The team took a hell of a lot of criticism. You know, and throughout it all, I said very little. I commented very little. You know, and I think it was probably, a lack of communication from all sides that, you know, the press picked up on, you know, the journalists and more rallies picked up on certain things and they made their own opinions. And there's certain things said were true and certain things weren't true. But yeah, at the end of the day, it was a very difficult period for everyone within the team, and you know, we all just had to stay quiet and do our work and get through it. And yeah, it's not to say the result in Spain has changed anything, but definitely from my own personal point of view, my confidence knocked in the middle of the year. It can very easily go the wrong way when your confidence is knocked. You know, and you have to dig deep within yourself to continue to believe in what you do and heading in the right direction. And Spain obviously went a good way for me. And it was for sure confidence was back. And that's, you know, I didn't really intend to say anything there at the end of the stage. It wasn't in my mind, but it definitely you know, struck a chord with where I come from and where I was at again, you know.
Absolutely. You know what? Can I ask you something? Right, we've kind of joked about stuff before we started recording and stuff. Obviously, it's been a bit of an ongoing thing, the fact that last week's podcast and everything, unborn child, now born for me and everything else. It's the first time I've seen your family on a rally with you. And I think it's possibly the most relaxed I think I've seen you on a rally.
You're right. It was the first time, mate. First time my kids, for sure, were ever at a rally or seen what I do. But my wife, the last time she was at a rally was, I think, 2011 in Finland.
Wow.
That was the only rally she's ever been to. And at the end of the day, rallies are a very difficult sport to bring a family to because we arrive on a Monday. We're away recce 12 hours a day. We go back to the hotel at night. We're doing videos. Thursday's filled with shakedown, PR activities. And rally starts normally Thursday afternoon, Thursday evening. And then you're away 15, 16 hours a day. During the rally, you get back to the hotel, you need your time, your co-driver to go through videos and for the following day. So you never have a minute to give to a member of your family that comes to a rally. So it is a tricky situation. It's not like a circuit racing driver who turns up to a circuit. They can have all their family in the pits. They go out and spend 20 minutes on a motorbike or in a car and they're back in. And that's it. So It's a very difficult environment to bring family to. Spain is probably one of the easiest in terms of it's a holiday resort in Salou. The weather's good that time of year. You can find accommodation easily for children, and you know, there's stuff for the children to do. You know, and I have a 3-year-old and a 2-year-old, so they can't be hanging about a service park all day. But obviously I'm based in Andorra now, so it's only 2 hours down the road, so that made it convenient. But certainly, when they were there and I was able to see them, it it was fantastic, you know, and the way the weekend worked out, and yeah, for my wife and kids to be there, see everything, and obviously to be at the end of the last stage was something pretty special. I was definitely a proud man at that moment. But yeah, what can I say? Rallying's a difficult environment to involve the family so much, but if there's one event in a year that can be done easily, yeah, for sure that one's the one.
I think it's as I say, it was one of those moments where you, it was almost because you're quite a steely character, I find, and I mean that with the greatest respect. You're very focused and everything else, but to see you know, with the kids and showing the kids around the car and things like that, I found that quite touching, to be honest. Whether because I was emotional because of what's been going on in my life, I don't know, but I found it kind of quite emotional, and you know, to see you with that, you know, obviously you're a dad and everything else, the smile and everything else, and I don't know. To me, it was possibly the most relaxed I've ever seen you at a rally.
Yeah, possibly. But like I say, you know, a lot of people think they know me because I do what I do. We're in a marketing job. We're you know, doing one of the best jobs in the world, and people just relate to you as being the rally driver. But you know, behind the scenes, we're all family people. You know, we all do normal everyday things. The families, we have to all clean dirty nappies. We have to get up in the middle of the night, as you well know at the minute, feeding babies. And we went through all that, done all that, you know, and I suppose when people maybe see that different side of it, they go, ah, that's a bit strange. But yeah, we're rally drivers when we're rally drivers, but we're also family people, you know, so, and we do the normal stuff like everyone else. So, but yeah, for me, it was fantastic to have them there, and certainly I enjoyed it. But like I say, it's a rally environment throughout a full week is not the environment where you can have kids there all the time, you know.
It's funny you should say that, Chris, about changing nappies, etc. Tony Simpson, about 2 months ago, came to me to do a bit of coaching with him when he bought his new car. And then once we'd done that, the conversation very quickly turned to, well, what happens next? What do I do? What happens when you have a baby? So yeah.
Funny, Paul Nagel, maybe it was in Germany. During Germany, his wife had their first child, and before that, this past year, Paul got a new dog. And every recce, Paul was showing me pictures of his dog, and yeah, look at the lovely dog, and look at this. And meanwhile, I had a 2-year-old and a 1-year-old at home. I said, Paul, you know nothing about it. Yeah, but it's pretty similar. It's the same sort of thing. I said, wait until you have your own. Since Germany, I haven't heard one word about the dog. I don't know whether he turns up to rallies and tests now looking quite bleary-eyed, having no sleep. So, yeah, like we say, when you have the children, you can't wait to get away to recce's to get some sleep, let's be honest.
Well, it's great to see you back on form. Great to see you, you know, taking another World Rally win at the end of the day. I mean, God, probably 5 years ago, you would have taken one World Rally win. Now you're a multiple World Rally winner. But one of the things you were quick to play down was the expectations for Rally GB. Is that a traction thing with the car? I mean, you know, where do you see Rally GB now?
Yeah, you know, like I say, there's a lot being said during the year, different things. But if you take each individual thing that's happened this year, it's been a lot of different things. In Monte, I made my mistake early on. Then we had an engine problem the following day, which would have ruled us out of result in any case. Sweden, we weren't that well prepared with diff mappings. The times the car was inconsistent and not really difficult to drive. Mexico, we won. Corsica, we were leading. We had the engine problem. Argentina, we turned up with a new spec on the suspension, and that did us quite badly. Both myself and Craig being retired on the same bump, and Sardinia, yeah, things didn't feel great on a stage, and we ended up touching the bank. Portugal slid wide on a tarmac corner, so it's been multiple things. People were very quick to say it's one thing wrong with the car, but it's not. But the one thing everyone will say, and everyone has tested it on gravel, has said that they don't feel that comfortable in it. They don't feel as if the car is wrapped around them. And you know, when Andreas Mikkelsen drove the car, it was the same. When Loeb drove the car, it was quite similar. And so, like I say, it's not one thing, and we're going through it step by step to try and get the car more comfortable to drive at a certain level, you know. Probably what I've been guilty of throughout this year has been prepared to stick my neck out, even when the car's not been comfortable. I'll still push it on to try to achieve what I want to achieve, and that's where I probably went wrong in the middle part of the year, you know. But at the end of the day, at this stage of my career, when you arrive with a new project, a new car, you're not in your 20s. You think you want to be world champion. It's very hard to step back and say, right, it's not right at the minute. I'll have to spend this year working on it, you know. But that's, like I say, that's probably where I went wrong this year. But we all knew coming to Spain that the car was very good in tarmac. Obviously, we were leading in Corsica. We had the problem. Andreas finished second in his first event in the car in Germany. So day one in Spain was key for us to get through the gravel in good position to allow us to fight on the tarmac. And yeah, that's exactly what happened. We finished third place, only 3 seconds off the lead on the Friday night. And then on the tarmac, we were able to punch in the times when it mattered. So yeah, Spain was good. So we're certainly working on the gravel setup. Like I say, I just arrived back this evening actually from a test for GB, which was in France, which was not ideal. The conditions weren't ideal, obviously. So I have no idea of what the car will feel like when I get the wheels, you know. So winning in a mixed surface event, probably mostly tarmac in Spain, doesn't mean anything for wheels, you know. So we have to wait till we get there and see.
And was that a bit of a conscious effort from the team? I mean, obviously, Yves Maton said that, you know, you're now working towards next year. Is that why the team didn't go to Wales? I mean, obviously, you know, you're against other teams that have been testing in Wales quite comprehensively.
That's probably a question for Yves Maton. At the end of the day, I have to take what testing schedule the team give. For sure, Wales is a unique event and you need to test in Wales. But what can I say? We haven't been there, and that's it. We go there and sort of second guessing a setup, and we have to wait and see if it works.
So what we need to do is pray for an unusually dry Wales Rally GB. Is that what we need?
I think all the prayers in the world won't get you that. It's just never dry in Wales. So we don't know. I've seen some images of Toyota testing, you know, in the last few days, and there will seem to be some dust appearing in places. So we never know. For sure, the weather there is very unpredictable. More than often than not, it's wet. So let's see what happens when we get there.
I mean, I was just looking back over your career. Actually, it's 15 years, would you believe, since you first did Rally GB, but it's 12 years since you first did it in a World Rally car. And you finished the 2005 event in a Subaru WRC battling with Mark Higgins in a Focus and one Colin McRae in a Skoda Fabia WRC. Yeah, what do you remember from that rally, that battle at the end?
That's a few years ago for sure. I drove a World Rally car then. I didn't drive another one in the World Championship event until 2011. So, that was a private Subaru we ran back then. And it was a special event for me, obviously, first time driving a World Rally car. And I remember, I think the closest we got to the front was 0.6 per K, which, you know, I think Solberg and Grönholm were at their height back then. You know, Colin was doing some rallies in a Skoda, and we managed to get into a battle with Colin at that time. That was pretty special to, you know, obviously I'd known Colin quite a long time then, and to do the same event as him at world level in a World Rally car was something pretty special, and to end up battling him during the event was it was good fun to say the least.
And obviously, you know, you've done GB a number of times since, and we know it's normally wet and muddy. And what is it about GB for you as a challenge about GB? What's sort of the biggest challenge? I mean, is it the relatively fast flowing nature of the stages, or what do you sort of look forward to in Wales?
Yeah, the stages are fast and flowing. It's normally muddy, dark, foggy, can be humid. It's where I done my first ever rally, the Bulldog Rally in Wales back in 2000, would you believe, in those forests around Carthinniog and Duvey. And for me, when you do your first rally in that type of condition, it always feels so familiar when you go back there. So yeah, there's something really special about that time of year in Wales. you know, the fans come out in their droves. They're all got their wet weather gear on. They're hanging in the ditches, waving flags, air horns, fireworks going. And, you know, I was one of those spectators back in the 90s when cheering on Colin and Richard in that era. So it's an event that sits very close to me. And for me, it is basically a home rally for me because it's where I first started watching World Rallies and where I competed in my first ever World Championship event. So it's a special, special event and a steep in history in the World Championship.
Now, before we get to Wales, which obviously everybody's looking forward to seeing you on, you've got a fun weekend coming up, and I'm completely jealous of this because I've just seen cars going through scrutineering on Twitter and whatever, and I was hoping to take the Subaru to San Marino, and it's not happening. But what are you doing this weekend?
I was asked some time ago. I think Lewis Moya is involved in the organisation of it this year, and they wanted to do a special event to commemorate Colin and his achievements, and they wanted to get as many world champion drivers throughout all the era. So I don't exactly know the roll call for the event, but I know there's a lot of a lot of the sports former stars, current stars doing it, and I was asked to go on in behalf of Colin because obviously my relationship with Colin and him being involved in my career from such an early age. And yeah, I feel a bit humbled in that respect that, yeah, all the rest of the guys have been world champions in their time, but I haven't achieved that yet, or I haven't achieved anything like the results Colin had in his WRC career, but still humbled to be able to be asked to go and for sure to get to drive Citroën Zara and, you know, put on a demonstration is something pretty cool. You know, I've seen images of this event in the past, and it obviously has a big following and a fairly relaxed weekend, so for sure it's going to be some fun.
Have you done much in the Zara before, Chris?
I think I remember I done a test or two with Citroën back in 2005-06 in the car. Then I done Bologna Rally Sprint in 2008, I believe. And then I had the privilege to do the McRae Challenge at Knockhill in the same car I'll drive this weekend, in the factory car from Citroën with Colin's name on. We had it there in Scotland back, I think, 2015. So I've done a little bit in it. And even just last week or the week before Spain, we had a Citroën VIP experience in the middle of France where we got the drive in Zara again. So it's a very, very special car to drive. It's iconic, but when you sit in it and get to drive it, it's a fully active differential car. It's got quite a lot of boost compared to the cars we have now, quite a lot of torque. So not as much horsepower, of course, as the new 17 cars, but the agility of those cars back then was something pretty special, and the Zara was in a league of its own on tarmac. So it's going to be a big, big privilege for me to drive it again. Yeah.
That's quite interesting, that, though. Sorry, Tony, but it still feels impressive then, even compared to a 17 car.
Yeah, it's back then it fully active differentials, front, centre, and rear, and as we all know, the budgets back then were huge, the development budgets, and the refinement and detail went into getting all the mapping correct. And when you drive that car, like I said before, you know, some of the issues I remember experiencing at the moment with our own car, the Zara then just feels completely wrapped around you. You feel as if the car does exactly what you want to do. But for sure, the regulations allowed back then you to program the differentials so well to help you drive the car, and it's probably autocorrect in everything you do, but it feels pretty special to drive, to be honest. And for sure, I'm going to try and enjoy it this weekend.
It was at that era as well, of course, where you mentioned obviously Loeb's been back recently, but it was the car that Loeb dominated in. People always remember, I suppose, Tommy dominated in the mid seat, and then obviously Loeb kind of dominating in the Zara, and everyone always said those cars were built around them. Does it feel like it was built around a one driver in particular, or does it just lend itself so well?
I don't know. I know maybe other drivers struggle to drive the Mitsubishi, but that Tommy had driven. But yeah, the Zara for me is something that really, really special to drive. I never drove the Mitsubishi, but you can't sit in it and say it was, oh, this is Loeb's car, but it's just a special car to drive for me.
Fantastic. Listen, Chris, before I let you go, announcement obviously today with regards to Oit moving. Was that a surprise to you?
Well, I think everybody in the paddock sort of got wind of it, you know, a month or so ago, but we all knew it was on the cards. And yeah, it's an interesting move. It certainly shakes up the driver lineup for next year. You know, Toyota look like they're going to have an incredibly strong team now with Yari and Esapekka and Mayotte. So it's going to be, they're going to have an impressive lineup next year. And it's a bold move, but one that may pay dividends, you know, because Toyota are a young team. They've got quite a good budget, continually pushing development. They're hungry. And yeah, it's probably in my book, it's probably a wise move for Motley. It's the right stage of his career. He's got enough experience, and to join a young, aggressive, budget-friendly team, it's definitely, for me, the right thing for him to do.
Do you see this is the beginning of a domino effect? Do you see any other moves?
I don't know, to be honest. Obviously, M Sport now are without odds, so let's see what OJ does and see what happens. But yeah, I've been playing musical chairs enough times in my career, and luckily enough, this time my contract was done a few years ago for a 3-year period, so I've always been secure for next year. And I'm a spectator on the other moves as much as anyone else.
Do you have preferences with regards to teammates at all? What I mean is by that, I think all the guys, you know, you've worked with obviously Craig this year and obviously Andreas came in as well. How has it been working with those guys? Andreas obviously only for a short time. Do you find having teammates that you can work with is a benefit, or are you very focused on your own thing?
What can I say? I have a different teammates obviously in time, but I have no preference, to be honest. You know, you get on with your job for sure. It's nice to be part of a really strong team that can fight on levels. And, you know, David Evans asked me the question a while back, and even last year when Volkswagen stopped, you know, would you worry about OJ coming to the team? For me, no way. A guy like OJ in your team would be a big asset, because he's currently the best driver in the world at the moment. He's proven that year on year. He's now more than likely to become 5 times world champion. So when a guy like that appears in the team, it ups everybody's game, you know, including my own. So for me, it doesn't matter who my teammate is, but preferably I would like a strong team to be in as strong a team as possible. But, you know, first and foremost, you have to concentrate on your own game, and that's what I'll continue to do, you know. And whoever comes and goes, let's see. But first and foremost, you have to just concentrate on your own game.
Fantastic. Listen, Chris, I'll let you go, because obviously you've just got back from testing. I can hear the little ones as well, which we've been talking about in the background. I'll let you go and have some daddy time. Enjoy this weekend at Rally Legends, and enjoy Rally GB. I'm sure you will.
Yeah, appreciate it, Tony. Thanks, Ryan. Yes. Thank you.
No worries at all. Folks, we'll be back after this break.
This is Absolute Rally. Case Notes Rally Magazine. Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports. From Clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good newsagents. Or subscribe at rallymag.com. Case Notes Rally Magazine. Your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. Thanks to Chris Meek for joining us. Obviously, we've been trying to get older, Chris. Completely my fault, as I keep acknowledging. But hey, the boy's here now. But listen, without further ado, we haven't really got too much into the start of the, I suppose, the domino effect of moves and everything else. Right, were you shocked to see Oit had signed for Toyota?
No, I think that had been fairly well signposted. We'd heard, I think that's the royal we. I think generally there was plenty of rumours about that Oit Tanak had been speaking to Toyota for a number of weeks. He may not be Finnish, but you can't get much closer to Finland than an Estonian. So he seems to fit in quite well with that Northern European, if you like, connection. But he... like I said, I think all I can think he's looking for his long-term career here, and quite rightly. I mean, Oit Tanak's now established himself as a front-running WRC star on a regular basis, and I think this has been a breakthrough year for him to do that. It's a difficult one for M Sport, isn't it? Because they, Malcolm Wilson has shown so much commitment to Oit Tanak on, not one, not two, but pretty much three occasions to keep bringing him back. And this time Oit's performed. And so to see him leaving M Sport is really sad for them. But I guess, from his point of view, he sees Toyota's long-term commitment to the sport. We know Toyota don't do motorsport by halves. They've come in and been very, very successful this year in their first season, and I'm sure Tommy Mäkinen's convinced him that there's a long-term future for him at Toyota. And as we all know, we'd all love to see Ford walking back through the door and all guns blazing backing M Sport, but there isn't a lot of signs of that at the minute, is there? And I think Oit's just looking at the long term. As much as maybe next year he'd be better off with M Sport, I think for the foreseeable future, he's seen his long-term value with Toyota.
Do we perhaps see this as M Sport making some strides into keeping Seb, i.e., Seb's still undecided, or rather there's still been no official line with regards to Sebastian Ogier's situation? Is this freeing up a little bit of budget? Is it going to perhaps bring in a driver, maybe one of Timo Jokke's guys, that's going to perhaps bring a little bit of budget to the team, which will then, again, prop up the deal? Because, Malcolm does like to wheel and deal a little bit, doesn't he?
He does, and certainly with Timo Jokke, there's been plenty of deals there in the past, with the Hirvonens and the Latvalas, and obviously Timo Sunnerland's already driven a WRC car with good success, really. And he, I'm sure, he's waiting in the wings. And like you said, ultimately, M Sport is a commercial team. If there's a Jokke driver there with some budget, I'm sure Malcolm would welcome it with open arms. And I don't know, let's hope for M Sport's sake that now they can keep Sebastian Ogier, because if Sebastian Ogier had gone, but they'd kept Oit Tanak, and then maybe Elvin, we hope that. But if they'd kept Tanak's now a potential world championship winner, isn't he? To lose Ogier and Tanak after the performances they both put in this year, ultimately the first and second in the world championship, it would be such a shame for M Sport if they take the drivers' championship, the manufacturers' championship, and lose their two best drivers. I don't mean that any disrespect to Elvin, but obviously at the minute he's in the sister team, if you like, he's the third driver. But if they lose their two current drivers whilst winning the championships and giving those drivers everything they could have asked for this year, it is really sad for them. So let's hope they can hang on to Sebastian Ogier. Why didn't Toyota go for Ogier? We've heard rumours recently of Hyundai pitching at Ogier, but that doesn't seem that they haven't been fully committed behind it. But interesting that Toyota didn't go for Ogier again. Was that because he knocked them back a year ago? Who knows? Maybe. They're very obviously loyal people, are Japanese, and they like loyalty. Was it because Ogier didn't sign for them last year? Who knows? But interesting that they didn't go for him again this time. They've gone for Tanak. So really, I think it's going to be between Citroen and M Sport for Ogier's services. I could be wrong. Hyundai could come in with that big offer, but let's hope they can hang on to him. Let's really hope. I think we all would love to see M Sport win the championship with him and for him to defend his title with them. But ultimately, like Oit Tanak, he's probably thinking, I want a 2-year deal, I want a 3-year deal, and I don't know where M Sport will be in 2 or 3 years.
I think what I find interesting as well, out of probably most of Seb Ogier's teammates, Tanak is possibly the one that has kicked on probably this season, more than perhaps, you know, when you think about Jari Matti alongside Seb at Volkswagen. Obviously, Andreas was the junior driver there, if you like, and he's still, you know, he was still establishing himself. Oiter's, you know, if anything, it's brought the best out of Oiter. And you just kind of wonder, perhaps, you know, is Jari Matti now looking over his shoulder at Toyota thinking, oh, you know, here we go again?
Yeah, I think Tanak will be a very different prospect alongside Latvala to what Sebastian Ogier was. But you're right in that Tanak has thrived having Ogier as a teammate. Certainly Latvala didn't do that, but it's brought Tanak on. You know, he's seen the world's best in the same car. And, you know, he'd have to say on a number of occasions this year that Tanak's actually outshone Ogier. And he's actually had more speed than Ogier. So we've seen flashes of brilliance from Oit Tanak in previous years, but this year he's turned into the real deal and a season-long competitor. So he seems to have thrived having Ogier alongside. And yeah, I'm sure when he goes to Toyota, he will be a big competitor for Latvala. But I think, obviously, Latvala, as we know, is a great driver, but sometimes struggles with his own confidence. I don't think we'll see maybe Oit Tanak knock Yari's confidence in the same way, and hopefully they, you know, they'll get on well as teammates and can develop that team forward.
Now, all that said, where do we see everybody else? What is this started, or are we just going to assume pretty much that Toyota's third car will be shared between Esko Pekka Lappi and Juho Hänninen, and a Timo Jokke driver will go in and replace Oit Tanak at M Sport?
I mean, let's hope that Elvin Evans now gets his chance with M Sport once again in the number one team, because he's done phenomenally well this year. He, when the tyres have allowed him, and obviously Demacher still in development terms, Demacher are still relatively new, so sometimes they get brilliant tyres, other times they're not quite so competitive, but when the tyre has performed, then Elvin's made the very best out of it. And I think he's really benefited from having the likes of Ogier and then Tanak as his teammates. And Elvin's done a fantastic job this year, so I would love to see him, you know, get his opportunity. But there is financial implications, so that could bring a Jokke driver in. It all depends on what Ogier does. But I don't know. I don't know whether we'll see too many more moves. I'm not even sure how much we'll see of Juho Hänninen next year, which is a shame because he's finished the season off strongly. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, Lappi's at the start of his career. Juho Hänninen, I wouldn't say he's at the end of his career, but, you know, this could be towards the end of his WRC career anyway. And I think we'll see Lappi in the third seat. I'm not sure what we'll see of you or Hannah.
There you go. Anyway, folks, as I said, this was always going to be a slightly shorter podcast. So before we go, before we wrap up, is there anything else I need to know, Ryan Champion, that I've missed due to the fact that I've been pretty much on a labour ward for 5 to 6 days, pretty much since last week, with very, very little phone signal? What else have I missed? Educate me.
You've missed a lot of testing. So all the front-running WRC teams have been testing for Wheels Rally GB, obviously just around the corner now. So they've all had nice wet conditions in Wheels to test on, apart from Citroën, of course, who did test in France in dry and dusty conditions. So not the ideal preparation for Chris, it's fair to say. But you know, I think we get to an exciting time. We'll build up to Rally GB next week, but, you know, we're going to see the 2017 WRC cars in competition in the British Forests for the first time. It's pretty open as to who's going to win the rally. It's likely to see M Sport crowned as manufacturers champions, which would be fantastic to see on home ground. But I think, you know, we're in for an exciting rally and a pretty open rally. I think, you know, I think it would be difficult. Well, I'm sure we'll have a go next week and we'll fail miserably, but difficult to pick out a winner.
Absolutely,
at the
absolutely. Folks, thank you so much for downloading the podcast this week. It has been a joy, and it was great to get Chris on finally. As I say, apologies that we didn't have him last week. You know where we live. It's Absolute_Rally on Twitter, facebook.com/AbsoluteRally. All the old episodes, absoluterally.co.uk. And thank you to all the kind messages and bits and pieces I've received from various people who listen to the program and everything else. Welcome my son and heir, Johnny William Simpson, into the world. And I've already started saving. Don't worry, that goes without saying. Folks, we'll be back same time, same place. Your little podcast holds next week.